For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to the World's Smartest Podcast Network Roundtable Show. Kaplan, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm feeling smart today. It's going to be a good one.
Feeling very smart. We are some of the world's smartest podcasters. Yeah. We do this show about once a month. I think it's been a little while longer than that since we do the last one. But we get together with the other people. We have this great podcast network that we started ourselves. We bootstrapped it because I didn't see any other podcast networks out there that were good for our style. And we're not big politics guys, but we're also not idiots. We talk world events, right? We're not American politics, but anything that approached American politics, you had to be on the you had to be storming the US Capitol to get onto one side of the network, or you had to be
storming Portland.
Storming Portland for the other one. Yeah, those were the two options. Yeah. If you were not extreme on either side, they didn't want you, you didn't fit in. So we said, let's start our own network with all of our favorite podcasters who talk some version of politics in a smart way, but are reasonable people. They do it somewhere between those two extremes.
Yeah, we're comedian. We want to do comedy where we don't what's the word? Become. We don't want to become the Proud Boys, but we're also not there to just worship at the feet of, you know, the President Biden, or, you know, we're here. We have our own perspective, and we found fellow brains, smart people, not just any old schlubs off the street. We got Andrew Heaton, who's he's a real giant brain. We like to say the mighty Heaton. And we got Andrew Jones Roy. Very, very smart conversations we have with these people. So,
yes, of course, Andrew Heaton hosts the Political Orphanage podcast. You could get all these on iTunes. And Andrea Jones Roy, or wherever you list a podcast, Andrea Jones Roy hosts Ask a Political Scientist. So Heaton, the Political Orphanage, is what it sounds like it is. He's an orphan because he's not on the right. He's not on the left. Right.
Yeah.
He interviews. So it's all, but he has great guests on from libertarians.
He's got some impressive guests. Yeah.
To both sides, to Democrats, Republicans. And these are like political figures working in America today. Andrea Jones Roy, Ask a Political Scientist. She's a data scientist. She's a professor at NYU. She's also a stand-up comedian. She also used to write for 538.com, which is that site that
Nate predicts Silver
elections and all that stuff. So she's dives into the data science by having on a political scientist and a comedian. And they kind of go at it from that perspective. So listen to all those. But most importantly, if you want to get this show, if you want to get Kaplan and I 3 extra days a week, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. That is our full throttle comedy podcast, about 30 minutes an episode. We come at you 3 times a week talking about our lives during quarantine, our lives in New York City, our lives in general. That show is called Live from the Bunker. Make it your morning drive time radio show. For $5 a month, you get those 3 extra episodes a week. Plus, you get a feeling that you are supporting the arts. Right, Kaplan?
you get to, you, we give you happiness guaranteed, and you support us, you make us happy. So it's our happiness guaranteed. No, but, and it's a great show. It's, you know, we like to say the Lost in America podcast is about the world.
It's us learning about the world.
Us learning about the world. Exactly. This show is you, the audience, learning about us.
This is the world learning about us.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And it's you want to know what it's like to be a parent in this remote school nonsense? I'm going to tell you.
Well, wait, Kaplan, let me lead with the headline here. Yeah. If you want to hear us fire our manager live on the radio,
right.
Listen to the episode that came out today. How about that? How about that for a plug? And then for 10, and also the main thing is you get to support the show. You know, we don't have a million sponsors. We have one that we're going to get to in a minute. We love them very dearly, but this isn't the WNBC. This isn't big time radio. This is podcasts coming straight to you. So for $5 a month, you get to support the show. Plus you get these three episodes. For $10 a month, you get a Lost in American number one in Armenia t-shirt. We went to number one in Armenia. And for $20 a month, you get your own ad on our show once a month. Doesn't have to be for your company. It can be. It could be.
You can break up with your girlfriend on live on air.
We'll do it for you.
We'll propose. If you want to make a proposition live, we'll do it for you as well.
They want to break up with their girlfriend or boyfriend, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
It ain't easy. So let us do it for you.
We will say it's not you. It's me.
Yeah, it's us. it's Kaplan and I.
Exactly. Anything you want.
We just fired our manager on the air. We know how to do these kinds of things.
We should have done that. That's if you want to fire your manager, we will do it for you.
And there
I thought
you
go. I think even manager or ex-manager Todd would agree. It was a fun firing. I think he'll appreciate it.
I think he'll enjoy it. Yeah, he hasn't heard it yet.
Once he stops crying and tries to figure out how he's going to pay to send his kids to college now, he will.
Well, if he just would have sent us a Christmas card, maybe he would still be employed. But anyway.
Maybe.
Kaplan, so that's how you support the show. Now let's get to our favorite sponsor of all time. Our first ever paying sponsor. It took us 4 years. Mm. We finally got someone throwing us money so that we can throw you money. I mean, we can throw you the best cereal out there. We're not throwing you money.
No.
But we're saving you money. We might as well be throwing you money because here's what it is. It's called Magic Spoon. It's the best cereal on planet Earth. It is a combination of those sugary cereals you used to eat as a kid. It tastes just like those, but it is sugar-free. It's the healthiest thing you can eat out there for breakfast. And they have blueberry. They have what other flavors, Cap?
They got cocoa. They got blueberry.
Frosted.
Fruity and frosty.
Frosted.
And I love the fruity. I have pretty much emptied the box, so I'm gonna have to place another order in. But they're all great.
It's 0 grams of sugar. It's 11 grams of protein. Only three net grams of carbs. Keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, soy free, low carb, GMO free. The gluten free is big for me, Cap. I'm a gluten free guy, as you know. And
yeah.
I'm gonna tell you, most of the gluten free products out there, disgusting.
Yeah, gluten-free cereals, other ones are not even worth eating. I've tried those myself because I used to do the whole like paleo gluten-free thing.
It tastes like you're eating corn on the cob in milk.
They make you just not eat cereals, what they do. But this, if you miss, you've been gluten-free, it's been saving your back, I know. It's been helping your overall health.
I went skiing last weekend. I'm healed.
Yeah, and you love to eat a cereal. It's very convenient. You like it. It reminds us of childhood, as you said. So this it gives you a chance to do that and still be healthy.
Cap. And here's the deal. If you go to magicspoon.com/lost, go grab a variety pack. You can get 4 boxes. Start out with the 4 boxes. Try them all. We always say buy your first pack for us because you love us.
And you're helping
buy
us
your
out.
Second pack for you because you're going to love this cereal. So go to magicspoon.com/lost. Use the promo code LOST at checkout. And here's where we're making you money. That includes free shipping and it gets you $5 off your first order. 100% happiness guarantee, Cap.
Yeah, 100% happiness. And those $5, that adds up. If you buy, that's spending is saving, they say. You invest that money, interest, whatever, you're going to get rich by buying the cereal and you're going to be healthy. So 100% happiness guarantee.
You said that our Patreon show guarantees happiness. I think these people have ripped us off because they also say they guarantee happiness.
Well, you know, you just tie them all together there. You save those $5 a month and where can you reinvest that money? In our Patreon show.
Exactly. Take that $5, put it back into the show.
It's like a circle. It's the circle of us. So
circle of us.
So,
that's it, Cap. Am I missing anything here?
No, a magic spoon is, do you know that it's made of, because people say, why is it, they don't have sugar. What do they use? They use something called aloqus, which is found in, it's monk fruit from Southeast Asia. The Buddhist monks have been eating since the 13th century. So don't you want to be like a Buddhist monk? They're very wise.
Sure.
They're very healthy. They live very long lives.
Well, it depends on which part of Southeast Asia. I know in Myanmar they start riots and they
we were told they didn't even have to tell us. Let's not talk about any riots or
but they're not from that part of Southeast Asia.
Okay, good.
They're from the peaceful part.
This is a peaceful cereal.
This box I'm holding in my hand. By the way, I've eaten all four boxes of my magic spoon. I'm hoping they're going to give us more. Have you?
Yeah, are they going to give us more if you guys?
I need more. If you guys keep buying, we can get more. This box contains. One box of magic spoon contains more protein than a dozen eggs.
I mean, take your eggs, throw them out the window.
13 eggs.
Who needs an egg? Eggs, you can go vegan or vegetarian. You don't need eggs. Yeah. So there you go. We're saving you. Say you don't need those organic eggs. Done. Cereal.
Who needs organic? Cage free?
You don't need to wash your. You know how annoying it is to wash your skillet after you fry eggs?
It's the worst.
It's like you can't get it off. You don't know if you should put it in the dishwasher.
And everybody knows, that cage free. It sounds good. Ooh, I'm going to cage free. But then it means that they're just in a bigger cage, I heard.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what that means. All right.
Free range. This is free range magic.
Free range cereal. These cereal grains roam freely.
Magicspoon.com/lost, promo code lost. That's let them know we sent you. That gets you free shipping and $5 off. Cap, let's get to the world's smartest podcast network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a roundtable of the world's smartest podcasting network, where myself, three friends, we're all going to climb into that audio hot tub along with you and share news and stories of the day, probably give each other colds, but hopefully not COVID. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I am Andrew Heaton. I am the host of The Political Orphanage, and I am joined by many people, including Turner Sparks.
Yes. What's up, everybody? Jump in the tub. I am Turner Sparks, and Michael Ira Kaplan and I host the Lost in America podcast. We talk to comedians around the world about the global news events happening in their country.
Hey, Andrea.
Hey, I didn't know, Kaplan, if you were going to say
anything. Oh, I didn't know if I was allowed to talk. So, but I haven't been in a hot tub with Turner in about 25 years.
Everybody knows why it's already stilted is Heaton has to coordinate the audio at the beginning of this. And so I was having everybody count. Having four people count is very complicated.
Very complicated.
I was just screaming at Kaplan and throwing shoes against the wall, trying to hit him through some sort of kinetic energy all the way there in New York. So they're all terrified.
We should release a bonus episode of us just counting because it was
it was thrilling.
Definitely took longer than this podcast will take.
Yeah. But we're there. Okay. Hello, Kaplan.
16, 17, 18. Nice meal. How you doing, guys? Good to be here.
Eric can sync it up now. You're welcome, Eric. You've been waiting for that shoe to drop. You can now do it. Good to see you, Kaplan. Hello, Andrea.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Welcome. It's great to be in the tub, not exchanging COVID. I'm Andrea Jones, where I am the host of Ask a Political Scientist, where I and a comedian and a live audience ask a political scientist all the questions they have about the crazy shit going on.
And Andrea, if I'm not mistaken, you are the first among us to have been injected with a COVID vaccine.
It is true. I got it last weekend. And
congratulations.
Yes, wonderful. I can speak at length about it in short order, but I'll spare you my various thoughts.
On my end, Andrea, I am a big fan of you. I am very happy that you are now safer than you were. I'm kind of worried about you catching autism. I don't know what that's going to be like for our show.
I have it now. Yep.
Okay, yeah.
Newly autistic.
Yes.
Yeah. Newly autistic from the vaccine.
That's why you counted to 11 to 15 so well.
Yeah. Yes. And only prime numbers, too. It was impressive.
Right, yeah. 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 It was very good. Well, okay. So congrats on getting the vaccine.
Thank you.
I'm never getting it. I'm the very last person in line.
I heard that as I got there, they're like, you're not Heaton, are you? Because he's left.
Governor Stitt put out an executive order saying there's a tier 8 and that's Heaton. There's not even a tier 7. It's just me at the very bottom. So I'm never getting this. I get it when everybody else in America and Canada's got it. Yeah. How did you get the top of the queue?
Yes. So at the very last second, I'm in New York, NYU, I think, and maybe other universities in New York State petitioned Cuomo or someone to get in-person college instructors added to Group 1B, which until the day Group 1B was allowed to get vaccines was just K through 12 teachers. And literally that morning, which was, I think, two Mondays ago, the Monday before MLK weekend, 1B started in New York State. And that day we got an email saying, actually, we got you in. Let me just say for the record, I do not think I should have been in Group 1B. That didn't stop me from getting it. But I think K through 12 teachers are a million times more important than college instructors for all kinds of reasons that we can get into if you want.
Well, yeah. Actually, my immediate follow-up is, so you are an in-site instructor?
Yes.
I asked this because like most of the states, including the one I'm currently in, have provisions for people in media. And I was like, oh, great, I'm in media. Mm. I'm a full-time media personality.
Yes.
And then I see the asterisk that says, not podcasting. And then below parenthetically, specifically Andrew Heaton. And I was right. kind of angry about that. But then I was like, you know what? Actually, all of this is remote. I'm fully capable of doing this remote. It actually makes sense that I would not be prioritized. But are you physically in a room with students?
Yes. So NYU, I actually was shocked by it all summer and waited for NYU to give up. But they went mixed in person or remote, depending on what your department told you to do. All of last semester. And all of last semester, I thought we would get shut down. There were various increases in cases. We crossed all these thresholds. The university kept going. I got tested all the time. And I taught in person twice a week to a very small group. My class had 200 students, but about half were stuck overseas somewhere. And about a quarter were somewhere else in the US and a quarter were in New York. And we taught a rotating group. So that quarter in New York was divided into three groups, A, B, C. And then they took turns coming in, but I was in every time. But it was so dumb because like two students came in at a time. Because if you're even the students in New York, I would like Zoom with them for office hours and be like, see you later. And they're like, ah, I'm in Midtown. I'm not coming down. Like, okay. So it was often just me in a room with my co-instructor and like one student, you know, in the back.
So, okay. So this does make me.
I was in person and I will be again.
Does make me feel a little bit better because, again, big fan of Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy.
The more you say that, the more I'm like, something bad is coming.
Very, well, no, but like when you mentioned that, I was like, is this just because like New York thinks professors are better than it? Like I my initial assumption was that this was just a straight up socioeconomic, like, listen, you mouth breathers, academics are at the top of the totem pole. Know your place, defer to your betters, touch your forelock and wait in line. Like that's kind of what I assumed was happening.
It is what's happening. And there is some, you know, currying of favor or lobbying that happened that got us squeezed in because, you know, as I said, I think a kindergarten teacher being in person is much more important than a grade 24 person being in person.
Can I say this?
Yes.
You dealing with college kids are much more at risk.
That's what I was going to say. Yes. Thank you.
Dealing with kindergartners, unless you're sending them to like summer camp all summer, like someone on the podcast. But as long as not,
kindergartners wear masks and they don't go party in between classes, right?
Yeah, that's true. There aren't a lot of kindergartners making out with each other at keggers. That's true.
Yeah, and also true. I think we're kidding ourselves. The idea of getting kindergarten teachers back, getting them the vaccine, is so they can go to so the kids can get out of the house, so the parents can work at home. But what do we think these college kids are going to do if they're not at college? They're going to sit at their parents' house and annoy their parents too. So it's pretty, I think it's the same thing.
That's true. And I do, what I don't know, I actually think the answer is no, the students don't get the vaccine. So the students coming to New York are unvaccinated because I think if you're under 18, maybe some of them are 18. But anyway, I don't think students are on the list. I could be wrong.
They're further down the list because they're young, healthy people.
Right, so. Right. And one of the things that I was reading at the end of last semester, last year, was that they were like, well, colleges didn't necessarily all have the huge outbreaks that we thought. I mean, some schools definitely did, but it wasn't as bad as people worried. But then if you look at the broader community, college towns, think, seem to be especially bad. And so I think maybe it protects me and it's better for the community that I have a vaccine. So I told myself, so I went, but it still means that a whole bunch of people in New York around NYU or around Columbia or whatever college town are probably in big trouble.
It turns out the vaccine can live in a trash can full of jungle juice. Yeah. They didn't think it could, but it can.
Yeah.
And for the record, like while I might have, like, I don't know, I haven't gone through every single state's rollout plan yet. Like, I'm vaguely familiar with mine. I'm sure that I would have nitpicky details and things. But if you listening at home have the opportunity to go get a vaccine, you should absolutely do it.
Yeah.
If I were, if they, like when I was living in Los Angeles, the either the mayor or the governor of California specifically specified that podcasters were essential employees. And I was like, I'll take it. Like, I'll take it.
Yeah,
because I was paying $1,500 a month to live in a box without a porch inside of a giant Adobe parking lot that cost. There's lots of reasons I took off.
All right.
But you lived in a car, to be clear. So
yes, and I'm now
that's a car with the vaccine though.
But I can move it wherever I wanted. But what I was going to say though is that I think we might have procedural differences potentially on the rollout plans and these things. If you have the opportunity to go to vaccine, you should go get a vaccine. And I'm not even really talking in terms of like the same way that like I would fight against certain tax loopholes, but I would absolutely take advantage of them until they're restricted or lifted. What I mean is it's my understanding that a lot of the vaccines just go bad if people don't take them. So they're like, we're allotting 10,000 vaccines today. And if people don't show up, those vaccines just get thrown away. So if somebody calls you and they go take, by all means, go do it. If you're on the list, go do it. You're not saving anybody a vaccine that's more deserving. You're just literally getting rid of it.
And that's the kind of stuff that I read to make myself feel better. But the thing that made me finally do it is I'm on a family chat with all my parents and my aunts. They'll get mad if I call them elderly, but they're all super old, right? And none of them have gotten the vaccine. They're like
50 years old.
I beat them to the vaccine and I was like, I feel horrible. Like I would much rather give it to one of you over 70.
They should teach a class then if they want the vaccine.
Yeah, they should step up and serve their country, maybe.
Well, Andrea, if it makes you feel any better, my brother got the vaccine before Mike Pence.
Yeah.
He got it before the Pope, right? Got it before the Pope. Emmanuel Macron, the president or prime minister of France, whatever he is, he got COVID. The dictator of France.
Yeah. The iron fist of center-left technocrat Macron.
He got COVID the day after my brother got the vaccine.
That's amazing.
So State Department officials, we do live in an oligarchy. State Department officials they're all put above us. Yeah. But so Heaton, you're saying you're not on the side of Ilhan Omar. Is that what you're saying? Because do you remember she was shaming and what is it? AOC. She was shaming AOC for taking the vaccine and not giving it to someone more in need.
I mean, I would love nothing more than for everyone on the squad to eat each other.
I'll just enjoy the
Discord from that. No,
I think she just didn't want the vaccine and just that was an excuse. That's the thing.
You're taking the higher road.
Like, oh, yeah. I want someone else to get it because you don't want the vaccine, but you don't want to come off like an anti-vaxxer.
So right.
I'm just glad that you didn't say you. I thought you got it because you were Dr. Andrea Jones Roy, and you just said. You just walked in this.
Arnold has made abundantly clear I should not call myself doctor any longer. So
apparently I'm going to be the resident populist of this episode and throw mud at my betters. Turner, I have a lot of respect for people of the State Department. They're very smart. Anybody that gets into the diplomatic corps, they have to pass an incredibly rigorous test. They speak multiple languages. That said, though, people in Washington hate them because they're very intelligent. They're very aware of it. And like to give you an example of the kind of thing that they do that makes everybody in Washington hate them, like the lobbying organization that they have about 10 years ago was pressing for hazard pay because they have to ride planes a lot, and planes are further up in the atmosphere, which means they're exposed to more solar radiation. And so if you think about it, they're bombarded by solar radiation, so they should be getting a hazard pay. And like everybody was like, you're wanting extra money because you have to fly on the government's dime several times a year.
I'm not surprised they got the vaccine. Closer to the sun, so it's even more dangerous. A lot of people don't realize that.
Well, also, we lived at my brother's house for 3.5 months during the pandemic. And I got to say, a couple times, he really overcooked the chicken. So
he wouldn't even feed you, right?
I mean, that's the list of why people hate him.
Oh, the State Department, enemies of the network.
I will say a lot of people in my family are in the State Department and watch my podcast. So I look forward to them really hearing how we all feel about them.
Again, I have great respect for them. I'm just saying there's a lot of people in Washington that get irritated by them.
Sure.
But they're very smart. Yeah. So
are you going to get the second? When do you get the second dose?
So I get the second dose in mid-February. I got the Moderna vaccine. Okay. So you wait 28 days minimum. And I was able to get one a few days after that. So mid-February. But I will say, Just in the spirit of transparency, the vaccine was difficult, actually. Like, this is a difficult thing to say because I feel very lucky to have gotten it, but I felt very bad for many days and I still feel sort of bad. And, so and I'm actually a little bit worried.
It was
worried
a placebo on top of that. So this
I know. It was heroin. So it's the withdrawal, I think. That's
Andrea
really
now has COVID. They injected her with COVID.
Is it like flu symptoms and stuff, Andrea?
Well, I have to say, so I got it in my left arm because I happened to have stitches in my right arm. So I already couldn't use my right arm for other reasons. And then my left arm, everyone's like, oh, it's going to be a little bit sore and whatever. I don't care. But it was sore isn't the right word. Like, I couldn't move my arm past here for like 2 days.
Halfway
up. And I couldn't, like, I had to like either sleep on my back or like flop over and sleep on my stomach because I couldn't sleep on my side. And it just really hurt. Like, it, you know how if you like pull a muscle or you work out really hard and it hurts like in a good way? Uh-huh. It wasn't that. I felt nauseous. It hurt so much. I was really surprised.
Your body is telling you you've been like clawed by a bear or have a knife wound or something.
Yeah. You're like, this is very, very bad. It was like a migraine in your arm. And then I felt extremely tired and I couldn't really think very well. And over the last 2 days, gotten hives. And I don't know if that's related to the vaccine or something else. I'm not trying to discourage people, but I think if I had known going into it would have been helpful. Because I was like, yeah, whatever, side effects, I don't care.
Guys, there you are. Don't risk the autism. Don't risk the hives. Yeah. Don't get the vaccine. It's
Americans love a good night's sleep. They're not going to get if this gets out, they're going to compromise their sleep.
Yeah.
People aren't going to, we're done. So let's not,
I hesitate to say any of it because it's like, I don't want to discourage people, but
Still better than the worst case scenario with COVID. It's much better to get the vaccine.
No, I disagree. We can't let the cure be worse than the disease.
Well, Scott, when you had COVID,
I had great. I slept well. I mean, I didn't have my arms felt good. My arms, I was shaking a lot. I was getting the chills, but
it's just good exercise.
But people leave you alone. It's much better. Yeah.
Hopefully I'll get both. Hopefully I'll get the vaccine, but I'll get it right before I catch the virus. And I'll get to experience the symptoms of all of them.
And just mine, no one has any sympathy. I'm like, oh, my arm hurts. And everyone is like, we don't care. You got the vaccine. Shut up. Whereas, you know, you have COVID and everyone.
No, everybody was shaming me. Everybody shames me. Kevin led the charge.
I led the charge. Kaplan had a heart attack a year ago and then got COVID this year.
We
documented it on our podcast. Complete opposite experience of how people treat you. Heart attack. No one blames you for your heart attack.
They ask, it's like they say, were you leading him on? What were you wearing? You know, it's a real victim blaming from the old days, I tell you. So it was not a good experience. But my uncle sent me a text today because he has the antibodies. And he said from 10 months later, he got tested and he still has the antibodies. So he was like telling me, like, you can, I don't need that. He's basically saying that I'm super good. So
make it with Kaplan's uncle. Send out the word. He's good.
So, by the way, this show so far is just a bunch of anecdotal experiences that people will take as news.
That's the news.
That is the news. Yeah. Welcome to CNN.
So then on that note, Turner, should we kick it to you? Because you specifically wanted to talk about people that were really glomming on to anecdotal things in a kind of pathological way and
good
ignoring
segue.
Evidence and things.
Yeah, as we all know, the storm, the QAnon storm did not happen. And if anyone's not up to date on what I'm talking about, I assume everyone knows what QAnon is at this point, but what was supposed to happen, what the cult, like the day of reckoning for the cult was January 20th at 12 p.m. as the election, as the hand transfer of power was happening. Trump was supposed to appear out of nowhere with the National Guard. And because Bush and the Clinton family, the Bush family, the Clinton family, the Obamas were all in the same place at the same time, they were all supposed to get arrested with Biden at noon. And whoever else was there, either Mitt Romney or I think Ted Cruz was somehow, they decided he was not part of the swamp. But
Bernie Sanders was sitting there in his lawn chair with a trench coat and oven mitts or whatever, just folding his arms, glowering about how this could be done by email.
I don't know if he was part of it, but anyway, when that didn't, and also this more that I didn't realize before, actually there was supposed to be a nationwide power outage at noon as well. And that's when all our TVs went off, that's when all that was supposed to happen.
Right.
And then when the TVs could come back on an hour or two later, it's too late. All these people are in prison. And Tom Hanks, for some reason, was going to be in prison. Right. And
he is the Macron of Hollywood. He is the hearted dictator of that, that regime. Yes.
And when that did not happen, the reports are kind of varying. You know, obviously the narrative from the AP and from everyone who was, you know, the people who are like, ha, like basically like us, like, ha ha, didn't happen. People were all like, oh, look, everyone's dropped out of queue. They don't exist anymore. Take it easy. We'll see you in another life. But then there's a guy who's writing a book about like Q. The people who are really studying it, they're like, oh, no. Sure, a number of people will leave forever, but a number of people are either saying it. There, a lot of people are saying that Biden is actually Q.
Hmm.
And so that now Q is our president. And so they should be taking signs.
Wait a minute. If I'm understanding this right, the people that were the most vociferous conspiracy theorists of the deep state and Trump triumphing over this dark, shadowy secret government, they're now thinking that Biden is a sleeper agent for this insurgent group, and they're going to be hardcore Biden supporters.
Is this the best news ever for national unity or not?
Just wait. Because when we say they, this is a, basically there's no leader anymore. Their leader, it was became very apparent that
Watkins,
Q,
I think,
is the guy who owns 8chan, which is like,
I think I say MyPillow.
4chan. 4chan exists because they were all these people were on Reddit and they got kicked off of Reddit for being racist. So they started 4chan. Then they got kicked off of 4chan for being even too racist for 4chan. And so this guy started 8chan, which is, and then he, the minute 8chan started,
racist Chan.
Yeah.
Yes. And then
too racist.
When 8chan started in 2017, all of a sudden this guy Q started posting anonymously that all these things were happening. Basically, it was a ploy to get people to join 8chan, right? And the man who started 8chan says that he's spoken to Q. He knows, he's the only one in the world who knows who Q is. And Q only drops his stuff on 8chan, on this guy's platform. So this
and
guy,
on our podcast. So stay tuned.
Exactly.
That's where I hear it. Yes.
If you listen to any episode of the World's Smartest Podcasting Network Roundtable backwards, we give instructions to people that are fighting the deep state.
But only for Patreon.
Talk about all the pedophiles that were arrested.
It's an extra pedo. Yeah, it's an extra Patreon level. So anyway, his son, the guy who knows who Q is, his son kind of put out a thing on January 20th saying, "Hey guys, sorry it didn't happen. We should all move on, accept it, and move on with our lives as best we can." Basically saying, like, hey, it's over. But anyway, a portion of them think that Biden is Q, a portion of them. So now it's like a power vacuum. Because Q's not posting anymore. So now these people, it's like when a terrorist organization splinters and then everyone wants control. So there's like three or four different people trying to take over. My question to all of you is,
should we swoop in? Is this
what
time?
Should the government do about it? Should we? So also to finish that, Twitter's taken down like 70,000 QAnon accounts. Facebook and Instagram have taken down like 60,000 QAnon accounts. They're all leaving in the basic social media we know and going into other ones like MeWe is one that I've never heard of. Telegram is another one I've never heard
Friendster.
Of. Friendster. So first question is, what should the government do about what is now a terrorist organization, right?
Right.
Hold on, I have to immediately jump in.
Sure.
Is it A, an organization, and B, are these terrorists or conspiracy theorists? Because there's a very big difference between holding aberrant views versus actually having actionable violent steps based on them.
Well, they stormed the Capitol a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure if you remember the news.
But hold on, to go back to that though, like Black Lives Matter is not an organization. If there's a riot and people are breaking windows with Black Lives Matter, it doesn't mean that anybody that believes in Black Lives Matter is automatically in favor of vandalism and robbery. So does QAnon have like people that they're members of the QAnon club and they have decoder rings and they decided to go storm the Capitol and this was a fatwa they put out? Or is it, it wouldn't surprise me at all the people storming the Capitol would include a bunch of conspiracy nuts. That doesn't surprise me.
But it happens that political science has a number of definitions for what counts as terrorists or not. And you can classify people in terms of different scientists do different things, but things like you vaguely agree with the group, you're a true believer, or you're actually involved in violence. And then we can talk about whether you classify something as terrorism or not. And the phrase that was used on the news 2 weeks ago for the insurrection, I think, was about right, which is you're doing something in order to incite fear, and you hope that that fear leads to some political end that you want. And so I don't think everyone in QAnon, we would say, are part of this. I think you can be like part of the belief system without being part of a group that actually believes that destruction of property or lives or whatever is worthy of it. So I think it's both of those things, and different people would fall into different categories. But I think we don't know. And I think that's part of the story around why folks weren't as prepared for the insurrection as they maybe should have been, is because people said, well, it's a bunch of people with wild ideas. They're going to show up with rakes and nothing's going to happen. Maybe. Or it was all an inside job. Who knows, right?
Well, they were with a comedy move. You lay your guard down when people are wearing these hilarious outfits. So
yeah. No, I was never going to worry about someone wearing a fur hood until now. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I'm glad that you mentioned numbers, because this is one of the I've never paid attention to the QAnon thing, because the reason is that, just having worked in cable television and stuff, I know that media people like myself love finding stories of idiots that we can talk about, because it makes us feel very smart and we look good and we get to make fun of them, and we don't actually care about the amount of people. So like, here about 3 years ago, flat earthers became a thing,
right?
And there's probably like 1,000 people in all of, out of 330 million Americans, there's probably 1,000 people that are flat earthers. It's minimal. It doesn't cause any damage, but everybody loved talking about it because it's ridiculous and the people are stupid. And so QAnon, I just sort of instinctively went that way on it. But the numbers you cite are much larger than I had thought. So I think you said 70,000 people on Twitter had been kicked off, which could have some bots in it. 57,000 pages on Facebook. This would indicate that there are at least thousands of people in this QAnon movement.
Yeah. I mean, these were pages. These weren't account. These weren't like personal accounts. These were like public pages, you know? And I guess the question, yeah. So the question becomes, is QAnon people, are they just a cult that
religion? It's a religion. It's going to become one. No,
I mean, it is a religion.
Isn't that the next move?
There's not much of a difference. I don't know if a cult or religion, what the difference is, but they are. Are we treating them like ISIS? Are we treating, as you said, are we saying, well, they're normal, but it's an extreme version of them? And the one difference between Black Lives Matter and the people who stormed the Capitol is Black Lives Matter never stormed the Capitol. Right. I think we need to remember that.
Yeah.
They knocked out a window at a TGI Fridays. You know,
well, Antifa stormed. Antifa took over Portland or Seattle or whatever, but no one cares about those cities. They're not that important.
Yeah,
okay. West Coast, but yeah.
So I'm going to jump in. I see there being two spheres that we need to discuss. Okay. One is what you think, and one is what you do. I am only concerned with the government litigating what you do. I am not interested, and in fact, openly opposed and hostile to the government litigating what you think. You as an American have absolute 100, and I'll say you as a human being anywhere have absolute unmitigated rights to your opinion and to believe whatever you want. Now, if you act on that and you try to hurt people or take their stuff, that's the point at which the government gets involved. But if you want to believe something crazy, I think it's extremely dangerous to have a government that's involved in prosecuting anything that's crazy. And to just, as a mental exercise for anybody here, I'm a very friendly, very nice, low wattage, atheist, agnostic character, right? So from my perspective, most of the people in government believe in magic. Like, from my perspective, they believe in a deity that doesn't exist. They're like, there are Muslims that think that their prophet rode a flying horse to the moon. And these other people think that the mother of their savior had a virgin birth from the Holy Spirit. This, you could make the case that's crazy if you're an atheist, but I don't want to have people like me get into power and suddenly lock up Methodists because we think they're nuts, right? Like, you got to be real careful with that. Now, if you're going to start mitigating on that and calling for violence or actively instigating violence, that's a thing. And so insofar as the government should be involved, it's that. And I'd say, like, keep your eye out, because if there's somebody that has a warehouse full of guns and they're saying these things, then maybe they should be on a list. Maybe we should be watching them. But just, you know, locking people up or anything like that, or somehow penalizing them for their opinions, I think it's a bad idea.
What about, okay, so what would you say about the Proud Boys? Because yesterday they arrested, I know this is coming out in a few days, but whatever. They recently arrested the leader of the Proud Boys in Florida. They also arrested the leader of the Oath Keepers. Uh-huh. And these are two, a few days ago, both for their role in the insurrection.
Sure. No, it's fascinating because I actually did like a really deep dive episode on Antifa, Proud Boys, and Oath Keepers a month ago. So I'm actually really familiar with these groups, although I'm less familiar with the news. Not knowing the details on their arrests, Turner, if they were arrested because they were instigating people to storm the Capitol, which is to say that they were promoting violent insurrection, that is something they should be arrested for and prosecuted for. If they're being arrested because they had the capacity to do that, i.e., you know, Oath Keepers could, in theory, stage a, like, that's, the capacity is not something that you can arrest people based on, right? However, if they were making actionable steps to abrogate the law or violate the law and encouraging people to do that, that would be the same thing as kind of a violent version of libel or anything like that, or the oft-used screaming fire in a crowded theater type thing. Yes, that's fine. But again, it's the actions and it's the outcome. It's not the capacity or the opinion.
I think that's where it becomes complicated from like a policy or intervention or management standpoint, just because I, in principle, totally agree with you, Heaton, that believe whatever crazy stuff you want, as long as you're not hurting anyone else, who cares? I think the challenge is if enough people believe a certain thing, all it takes is one or two people to say, well, we're angry enough that violence is the only way to resolve this. And so the switch from inactive to active, I think is could be very fast. And maybe even the riot on the Capitol wasn't even planned. And that's an example of, you know, you just light a match and the forest goes up. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think from the perspective of how do we make sure something like this doesn't happen and not just being reactive gets into more complicated things like, should we intervene on 8chan or should there be checks on YouTube craziness? I was reading about the guy who was a Vice co-founder who's a Proud Boy person.
He started the
Proud
Boy.
Yeah. And I landed on his YouTube page yesterday because I was very curious like what he was saying. And they were ancient YouTube videos. It didn't have particularly that many views, but it's like pretty gross stuff, but pretty innocuous. But if he then goes on to become this, you know, person who incites violence and people were getting in fights, this was like a 2018 article, getting in fights outside of his shows in Brooklyn or whatever, like that, even that's maybe not that bad, but now we have the violence today. And so it's like, at what point do you intervene? I think is not so easy.
It's a great question, but one where I get very classical liberal very quickly on that, because if we're going to, it's one thing I should say, if a private platform like YouTube, like Twitter, like Facebook says, we find this person odious and we decide as a private business, we no longer wish to associate with them. That's not something that the government's using coercive force to intervene on. However, when the government gets involved, that's a thing where I'm very quick to point out that we need to be aware that bad actors that achieve power in government will then have that power to use. So anything we do where we go, all these knuckle-dragging conspiracy theorists are doing this thing, we need the government to come in and tell them to shut up. 4 years from now, when President Trump gets elected on the Patriot Party, we've now given him that power in order to look at what people are saying and say, well, actually, we think that this is insufficiently patriotic, or we think it's going to, teach children bad. I'm real hesitant to do that. I think points taken on all of that, and we it's better to be proactive than reactive. But my thing is, it's actionable legal thresholds that need to be met. Yeah.
And also these private companies, like you say, they're the ones doing it, but there's like sort of this pressure that they all had to do it. You know, like Amazon had to throw Parler out. Like they all did it. And so then it becomes like, well, there's no place for these crazy people to talk. Then they are kind of being, their free speech is being limited if every corporation is. So it's a tricky.
To be clear, I'm definitely not, you know, as I'm thinking out loud about this, I'm definitely not advocating that the government silence this speech or anything like that, right? And even though I think it's hateful and I don't agree with it and whatever, I share the view that we should all be able to think what we want and talk to others who think what we want. I think maybe for me, more as just a personal curiosity, is why people are drawn to this sort of thinking in the first place.
And
what's
personal
going on in our society that makes it that something like Q or anti-vaxxing or whatever it is that I particularly find so hard to understand why someone would flat earther, like there's something going on that is satisfying and that interests me.
I think I could weigh in on this. I'm totally with you. Wanting to discern what that locus is, what that generative element is that is attracting people to this. And I can weigh in on that because I have grown up listening to Coast AM, which is the BBC for people who've been abducted by aliens.
Yes.
I did a deep dive on why UFOs are in the news here about 4 months ago. And like, I'm very familiar with UFO theory groups and that kind of thing, even though I'm a tourist there, but I know that land very well. And what I'll say is that There's a lot of people that feel, this is my take, they feel very disenfranchised. They feel disconnected and they feel like they don't have a lot of purpose. I'm poor. I live on the outskirts of the happening places of the world. I live in a county that no one knows. I don't make a lot of money. I'm not very important. I'm not well respected. And I find this conspiracy theory, but now my worldview is no, I'm on the edge of this massive tectonic plate. I'm in the inside. I'm in the know, and I'm fighting this evil thing. I have purpose. I have people that share my convictions here, and I am involved in this thing. I'm not on the outside at all. It's all these people that don't know what's up that are on the outside. I'm right. on the inside. And I think the best way to handle that, I guess, is to try and create a society in which we're more connected and loved and have purpose.
Which is direct opposite of our instinct is to say, okay, QAnon people, we're kicking you off of Facebook and Twitter and everything else. And if you say all these horrible things, we're going to, you know, cancel culture, all that kind of stuff is directly at odds with that.
Well, can I just say, I have a friend, a distant friend who's on Facebook still, who's big time Q. That's how I know what Q's thinking. So while we were talking about this, I pulled up his page to see how he's handling all this. All
right.
And he lists a picture of Joe Biden's plane. Apparently Joe Biden, their Q is claiming, came to the inauguration by private plane because the military refused to fly him there. And he says that they're very careful. That Trump said that he wishes the next administration well. He didn't say them by name because Q is saying that the next administration is the military. The military is really in charge right now. Because Trump always said he would remain neutral and step down. And then the military is taken over as the new Q.
Be on the lookout for that.
One more nugget that Trump gave him was, he said, you know, in his speech he did to like his friends and family, kind of when he was leaving the White House, he said, the best is yet to come. And they're all like hanging under that line.
And he said something like that in his speech, like one of the recorded videos a few days ago as well, when he was like, all right, there's going to be.
Because we all know Trump never just says rambling, hyperbolic things that have no meaning and are just sentence fragments about how great he is. That's never happened.
He also said, have a nice life.
That was the best.
I like that one. It's maybe the best line I've ever heard from him.
My
question for all of these groups, cults, organizations, whatever you want to call it, is why do they make the mistake? Shouldn't they know better than to make the mistake of saying, like, being so specific that this will happen on this day at this time? Because then you have to do all these gymnastics and backpedaling and all this. Like, remember
the Incas made that mistake, right?
Yeah, the Incas made the mistake 10 years ago with the rapture and all of that. Like, I feel like that's a rookie move.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, listen to Coast to Coast AM.
That's why they live on, you know?
Andrea's dead right. Like, I listened to this one Coast to Coast AM episode, and it was like, it was 2012 was the year that all the stuff was supposed to go wrong. And George Norrie has on the psychic, and he's like, now what are you getting? And she's like, oh, 2012 is going to be a big year. And he's like, well, what's going to happen? And she's like, there's going to be massive, massive socioeconomic turmoil. The grid's going to go down. All this stuff's going to happen. Or, George, it's going to be spiritual. And those changes are going to be very, very big on a spiritual level. And I'm like, wait a minute. So it's either like crazy, like stuff of the streets, or also like our auras change in a very non-quantifiable way. If you're going to start a cult, do that. Make sure you got a release valve.
Yeah. Yeah. Non-falsifiability is the tenet of a successful cult, obviously.
Well, Kaplan, because we've invoked the specter of Trump, our now former 45th president. I know you were paying attention to pardons. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I'll do a quick take, is that I was going over the list of all the pardons, because I've kept thinking Trump was elected president, all these norms are broken, right? That was for 4 years of norms being broken. But the one norm I was kind of looking forward to in a weird way was the, you know, all these presidents pardon the shadiest guys. I call it like the Mark Rich level, was like the Mendoza line, the Mark Rich of what Bill Clinton famously pardoned the guy who was like dealing arms to the Iranians because his wife gave money to, it wasn't even his wife, it's his ex-wife, but she gave money to the campaign. So I was assuming the whole time that Trump was gonna, because you know, he did it along the way in 2017 or 18, he was like, what was the guy, Sheriff Joe, he pardoned, right?
Yeah, Joe Arpaio. Yeah,
and he did Dinesh D'Souza, whatever that guy's, I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name, that whack job. So I was like, just thinking, like, who is he gonna pardon for his big finale, you know, like what is he gonna do? So I get to the list, and I got to say, he really disappointed me, because
you were hoping to like Jeffrey Dahmer. And
what's the guy, the tiger guy?
Joe Exotic. Oh, right. Yeah.
I thought he was going to end up on the list, I have to say.
I thought that was going to be on the list. I thought Shoeless Joe Jackson or so. I don't know, something interesting at least. But he went through, if you go through the list, it's a lot of names. But like, I looked through the list of other presidents and Trump actually pardoned less than like any president in like 100 years. You know, you would think it's something he would love because he loves to like the absolute power.
Yeah, the most king-like power there really is.
Obama did way more. Obama pardoned more than his 13 predecessors combined his last day of office.
Wow.
And Trump did comparatively little.
Yeah.
No, Obama's if you think about who they were, Obama's were a lot of overturning drug sentences and sort of that kind of clemency, like lower profile, but sure. Right. Yeah. The numbers are huge.
That's true. And I don't know all of them, so I'm not slamming Obama. It's just numerically he did more than Trump did.
Yeah.
Trump did a lot of like Obama would commute the sentence from 30 to 20 years and then Trump would pardon them. Like he did a lot of like, unlike the drug offensive ones, like I'm going to do better than Obama. So he did do a lot of good. He pardoned a lot of like people who were
nonviolent offenders,
offenders. Okay. Yeah. Now, of course, he also, did the Steve Bannon was, I guess, the biggest headline.
Steve Bannon's the clearly like flunky that just got a get out of jail free card for licking Trump's boots for 4 years. Anybody unfamiliar with this, Steve Bannon, who looks like a man that congealed inside of a dumpster and then fell out of it to go yell stuff on his website. He had just scammed people on the wall. He'd formed this organization to get private donations to build the wall because the government's too limp-wristed and weak to do it. So if they won't, we will. And he got millions of, and it turns out he took several hundred thousands of dollars from this just for himself, even though it was like, they weren't even claiming to have any administrative overhead or anything. I mean, just it's a straight up scam. He literally gets arrested by Postal Service employees on a Chinese billionaire's yacht. Remember how much he hates China? He's not a Chinese billionaire's yacht.
Perfect storm of like showing what hypocrites they all are.
And getting pardoned for that. I mean, he was targeting Trump's base. He was taking money. He was scamming Trump's base.
Yeah.
He was scamming Trump's own voters. Exactly. And yet. Yeah. In the end, because he came back to him, I guess, and he wants to win in 2024. You mentioned the Patriot Party.
Yeah.
Just wondering, did he end up doing anything for his family? I know I was waiting for the self-pardon or something clever along those lines.
He didn't say anything for his family. Right? He did a lot I recognize these names, a lot of like Syrian Jewish guys who are he respects who I think are connected to the Kushners in some ways. Because like my uncle, like my same uncle with the antibodies, his boss who was like washing money for the Cali cartel in the 90s, he pardoned him.
Nice.
He did a
Wait,
lot of
your things. Uncle was doing this or
no,
your
my
uncle
worked. My uncle's proud of the fact that he's like, yeah, my phone was tapped to my office phone, I found out later, was tapped for years because they were investing in this guy. So there was a lot of like game that he respects, I noticed. Like a lot of like, oh, that was a good scam. Like all like, you know, when Trump said that thing about, like you said earlier with the vaccine, like I'm smart for not paying my taxes kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people I think he respects because they didn't pay their taxes. There was this one guy who caught my eye. His name was George Gilmore, who he didn't pay his taxes. And in his appeal, he claimed that a hoarding disorder made him spend lavishly on personal expenses rather than pay the IRS.
Oh, my God. Sorry, I bought all this stuff. I've got a disorder that makes me buy stuff and I couldn't pay the government because I was too busy buying a hot tub because of my disorder.
So great.
Oh. Tiger Woods was like, I'm a sex addict. That's why I cheat. Like,
Yeah. There was some good Medicare fraudsters down in Florida. There was like six people I was reading about who weirdly there were a bunch of organizations that were agitating for them to get pardoned. I think they were concerned about the procedural mechanics that like the government had actually prosecuted them based on the wrong things. But the underlying scam that they were doing was that they were really scamming Florida on Medicaid, where like in Florida, you have to get. If you're providing mental health services through Medicaid, 80% of that has to go directly to the medical care for the patient. Only 20% can go to administrative costs. So they were forming like shell corporations that were like, they were end up basically giving them 50% and pocketing the rest and doing this in huge levels. There were like this doctor that was, well, anyway, they got
American pardon. Entrepreneurship and creativity to me. So
can you know, the thing is, oh yeah, go ahead, Turner.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I have a question here. So there was those reports, and I don't know if they, I don't think they were ever verified, but there was all those reports that Trump was selling pardons for $2 million. Did you read those? In the past couple of weeks, they were saying, if you want to get a pardon, you can get it. It costs $2 mil. Question being, but they can never tie it to, it wasn't Trump. They, once you read the story, it was like, well, his staff or his handlers have been making money off promising pardons that Trump will give people. Question is it common that I really don't know this answer. Is it common for presidents not to sell like straight up for dollars, but for campaign donations or to pardon people who've donated stuff to them in the past? Do you guys know?
Well, I mean, they do it with ambassadorships for sure. Get ready for Biden to do this, just like Trump did it, just like Obama did it. To go back to the State Department, there are people like, I'm sure, Turner's brother and Andrea's family who have worked their way up through the State Department as very intelligent civil servants that are actually putting their lives on the line because they're being sent to some godforsaken hellhole where they believe in communist and magic.
And they overcook the chicken, though.
They overcook the chicken, and they have to sit there stamping passports and fill in the blankistan for 10 years. And some of those people eventually work up their way to being an ambassador, and we send them to the trouble countries. We send them to the places people are getting shot at. The cuddly countries that are fun and you want to throw cocktail parties in, like France and England and Poland and Iceland, those
famously
ones
friendly.
Straight up go to people that bundle lots of money. So in fact, you can almost work out a financial algorithm where if you give like $3 million, you might get Finland. If you're able to bundle $15 million, you're going to get France. That's why under the Obama administration, our ambassador to Hungary was a soap opera producer. Under Trump, our ambassador to the United Kingdom was the owner of a baseball team. So that absolutely unquestionably happens and is absolutely unquestionably graft. Any other country in the world would look at that as corruption.
So I have always harbored a bit of regret for not going into the Foreign Service myself. And now I know I can just bypass all the hard work of my aunt and my grandfather and whatever. And you're right, Heaton. My aunt was the ambassador to Kazakhstan. So you 100% the whole fill in the blank, everything.
What is very likely is that you will rise to the point of being the quiet undersecretary of diplomacy or what you're the person actually running the show, and the ambassador just throws cocktail parties and cuts ribbons. And if you work really hard, you can do their work for them if you're in the State Department.
Yeah.
And so hats off to them. I don't know that there's a pardon version of that, Turner, or that, I mean, like, obviously there's like kind of loyalty swaps, right? If you were sufficiently loyal to me, or alternately, maybe you know some stuff about me and I'm going to pardon you because I don't want that to come out and harm me. So I think that clearly there's shady dealings in terms of abusing the thing. Flip side, though, there were at least 10 people that were pardoned for nonviolent crimes. There were multiple people that were, you know, had there was a lady that had been in prison for a 30-year sentence for assisting her husband doing her boyfriend making methamphetamine, but she nonviolent. She wasn't directly doing it. She was pardoned. Like the weird thing is, as odious as I find a lot of these, I actually think the power should exist because if Trump or Biden or Obama is going to pardon like 10 people that are clearly flunkies that should be in prison, but they're also going to pardon 10 people that really should not be in prison. Like I would take that deal.
Like for every kind of social good, you get a friend or something like that. I also have to say that in the case of Trump, it's increasingly obvious to me that it's very hard to stay loyal to him. I mean, look at what happened with Pence at the last minute. You know, you can
he's not paying Rudy Giuliani. He's instructed his people not to pay Rudy Giuliani. Like this man.
Anybody who's lived in New York knows you don't take money. You don't go on loan with Trump. You get it up front.
Yeah.
But I was going to say with Trump, the money isn't as much. You can't bribe your way. As important as is, you can kiss his ass. Flattery. Like, did you see the Detroit mayor, former mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, who was a Democrat, and he was in charge, again, another fraud case, and he wrote a whole letter to Trump saying that you've shaken up the entire world. I applaud your tenacity. He went a whole paragraph like about how great a job Trump's doing. So Trump he's a Democrat in Detroit, obviously not a Trump political ally, and Trump pardoned him. And the best part is the guy had a friend who was like, it was convicted of the same crime. And that guy, he left that guy behind. That guy's doing another 10 years in jail.
He didn't say,
P.S. my buddy also likes you.
I have to say, I completely disagree with all of you. I'm so against pardons.
Okay.
Go on.
I think it's the dumbest. It's the closest we have to having a president be a king, which is something we don't want ever. We never want a president to be a king.
Right. I don't know the history of it, but it is actually like the leftover, like one piece that they left in of a monarch that they thought was necessary for the power.
During the Revolutionary War, they wanted the president to be able to pardon people that had supported the British, but were living in America. Because we couldn't just prosecute everybody that had been a Tory, that was like the third of the population that was supporting the British. We didn't want to have to prosecute all of them. Mm-hmm. It probably would have fallen apart is the short answer. So they kept that. I don't know. I can see situations where maybe well-meaning legislation and judicial rulings actually create a situation where somebody is being locked up lawfully that shouldn't be. And I like the idea of there being some sort of person that can do that. Maybe it should be a board. I don't know. Maybe there's a better way to do it.
Like it's a release valve for like the law has changed since you were sentenced. And mm-hmm. so someone or some board, I think you're right that it could be, have to be the president.
Amy Klobuchar, the Secretary of Pardons.
I don't know about her. I went on a weird dive once on the Turkey pardon, which is its own strange thing. Yeah. And I read this a whole book, like some sociological book about like why we do it. And it's this display of power. And it's also humans lording over the animal kingdom. It was sort of
Thanksgiving when they had the ceremonial pardoning of the turkey. I think they just did it because it was like a funny bit that all the presidents.
But now it's a whole thing. Yeah.
They really pardon the turkey? You mean like it's a real thing?
I think they do get sent somewhere, but I think they die almost immediately. I'm not totally.
Can I
don't remember the details.
Question? Are we talking about turkey, the country, or the animal?
No.
The animal. She's talking about the animal.
I don't know.
Listen, I would love to discuss this. However, I know that Andrea has to go in a minute. We haven't got to my story. So I'm gonna curtail the turkey anecdotes. Here's something. I don't know quite how to phrase this, but I want to get your input on this because the inauguration just happened at the time that we're recording this. Everybody kind of, a lot of people breathed a sigh of relief, most certainly Democrats in the media. I breathed a sigh of relief. I think my social life's going to be a lot better over the next 4 years. I think my professional life's actually been a lot much better over the last 4 years because I have noticed that the people that agree to come on the podcast and then suddenly without warning email me, we can't do it and never respond to me again, are invariably progressive Democrats. And so I think everybody's going to get a lot more bipartisan. The thing that I'm, as somebody that has been a vocal Trump critic, I'm kind of looking at the reactions from progressive media and my Democrat friends. And do Democrats just flip out every time there's a Republican in office? Like, was this just Trump or is this just a permanent lifelong thing of whenever there's a Romney or a Bush or a McCain, like everybody that's a Democrat thinks the train has gone off the rails and everybody's in a panic. Like, is this something that we need to brace ourselves for every other administration?
Yeah.
Or is Trump
for sure?
No, I mean, that happened to Bush. That happened under
I was going to say, remember Bush was the worst president in human history? And then Trump was the worst president in human history?
Romney would have been a proto-Hitler, I think. Like that.
It will be very interesting if Romney somehow, it'll never happen, but if, say, he wins next time.
This is a good time for Romney to run again, I would have to say. I've never had more respect for Romney.
You would never vote for him also.
Well,
depends on who he's running against.
If Trump actually did create the Patriot Party and basically split the Republican into sane and insane halves, it wouldn't work out electorally, but Romney could get that nomination.
Yeah. Heaton and Turner's point, I mean, when Romney was running, because I am representing the left on this podcast, I think, when Romney was running against Obama, my main thinking was this is the worst person ever, exactly playing into all the stereotypes. And now under Trump and under what he's done, I'm like, oh, Romney, same with McCain, right? National treasures. And
H.W. Bush, when he died, everybody was like, what a great guy.
Yeah.
But back in the day, he was this evil, evil Reagan acolyte that just wanted to screw over poor people.
The only question I have about all this, though, Keaton, is you're saying that this is a Democrats versus Republican thing. My understanding was that that is on both sides.
So let me run a theory by you. And I'm very I am open to being wrong on all of this. But basically, here's what I need to figure out on my end. Do I need to do all of my bipartisan growth during Democratic administrations? Like, is it like a bull market and a bear market where if there's a Republican in office, I just need to know that I am always going to be morally dubious and that like people aren't going to want to work with me? Like present company, very much accepted, by the way. But like, is that like, do I just need to know, like, I need to get married in the next 4 years because I'm not going to be allowed to date again? Because if there's a Republican in office, I'm some kind of crypto Hitler, right? So this is my theory. I think that broadly speaking, not universally, but broadly speaking, when conservatives disagree with you, they think you're naive. When libertarians disagree with you, they think you're ill-informed. I think when progressives disagree with you, they think you're a bad person.
I think that might be right.
you're motivated by either bigotry or hating poor people.
If you want to marry somebody younger, then definitely. I don't know about.
I thought you were going to say you were going to marry someone progressive just so you could get the left on your podcast again.
I'll take any, like, I don't have a litmus test for who I date, but a lot of the people I've dated have.
I think Tommy Lahren's available.
I'm gonna actually give a thumbs down on that one. I feel like she's the walking embodiment of, may I speak to your manager?
I don't think we would work out, by the way. Yeah, well, she zigged when they zagged. She came out as pro insurrection the day of the insurrection.
Hold. No, I don't know, Heaton. That's a good question, and I'll get myself in trouble among the left. But I think you're tapping into something that resonates, at least with my experience of those three groups, I would say.
Okay, so everybody that's not a progressive Democrat, now is the time to like talk to your progressive Democrat friends about bipartisanship and unity and all of that and enjoy that gravy train.
Well, and I thought about that a lot during the various, you know, Biden's inauguration speech and the various comments around the inauguration calling for unity. And I was like, it's very easy to call for unity and for me to agree with him because I do agree with him. And even by saying that, that alienates me from people left of me who think Biden is way too conservative for this country, right? I mean, even during the Biden inauguration, there were those protests that you were talking about, Kaplan.
Right.
And
well, there's people Portland, already mad. Yeah. Progressives already upset at Biden because they're already like assuming he's not going to kill the filibuster and add D.C. and Puerto Rico as states. Already mad about things he's not going to do.
Right.
And not like focusing on what is going to. Yeah. So people are, but also people to say what you're saying, like they're in bubbles. They live in bubbles. So conservatives grow up, like if you're a conservative and you grow up in the Northeast or somewhere and you go to college, you're used to arguing with liberals.
Yeah.
Mm. You're used to being people you don't agree with and you stay quiet or you argue. But a lot of people now, I think, don't on both sides. They stay in their bubbles and they're not used to the other side. So it makes it very.
Well, they do. And I don't consider myself a conservative, but they do find that conservatives are a little bit better at that in large part because they still consume media. They're still watching TV shows and films. Right. So it's easier for them to get into the headspace of somebody that's a progressive Democrat because Hollywood tends to be that way. Whereas if you're a Democrat and you grew up in a bubble, you may not have that ability. Like you may not know anybody other than just, you know, anonymous jerks on Facebook.
Exactly.
It's like British people watch a lot of American media, but we don't watch a ton of British media until the pandemic.
It's like when my dad watched The Office, he was like, I can't understand them.
Yeah.
Like British Office.
The English like,
are they speaking?
Yeah.
From my perspective, I doubt I will ever be thrilled with the president. Like I don't think that's going to, even if the president that I want to win wins, I don't think I'm going to be like, yes, we did it. Like the wheel is broken. History stopped.
This is the Daenerys Targaryen we were promised.
I think this is how I kind of like, emotionally, I sort of view presidents as like we're all in the car and the person like person A now controls what we're listening to. And I'm like, oh, man, George is in charge. We're going to get a lot of Fleetwood Mac. But you know what? He does like Electric Light Orchestra. I agree with him on Electric Light Orchestra. But
there are cases where you can persuade that, you know, once we hit Pennsylvania, let's switch to my music and then we'll switch back.
But I'm kind of looking at it like it's a hodgepodge. And like this is the part of the pie chart that I agree with. And I'm not thrilled. But OK, 4 years from now, we'll get another person that's doing it. But I kind of get the impression that there are a lot of people that view it like we either have to be driving to Vegas or we're driving off a cliff. And if we're not on our way to Vegas, we're all going to die and we have to panic.
Well, and there's an argument to be made that we overstate the influence of the president. I mean, people debate all the time about whether the president is in charge of the economy or not. And the answer is definitely not. There's so many other things. Yeah. Of course, you can have policies that tweak things, but there's a lot going on that, you know, looking at how the economy did under a president makes no sense. Yeah.
I will say that the president in the last 4 years influenced the culture of American dialogue more than I thought he would.
Yeah.
Like definitely people were more likely to be aggressive, to be like, fuck you.
The tone,
which I know, well, I always thought was like a BS thing. Like we need to change the tone of America. But I will say over the last 4 years, the tone got pretty dicey.
Yeah.
And in that capacity, yay, Biden. If we're talking tonally, I am in love with President Grandpa. And I am so happy that he's going to tamp this down.
Yeah. I'm not going to watch press conferences. I'm not going to follow him on Twitter. It's great. But there's people I know on Facebook and stuff who are Republicans, and they're already writing about how America, they know it's over. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. I will say the same thing.
Maybe it is.
Friends of mine write out a big long thing that I thought they were talking about Trump because they were like, it's just not the same. We all need to focus on family, focus on friends, and just understand the next 4 years are going to be terrible. And our country's going into socialism, and we just need to be okay with it. I'm telling you, without going into detail. Yeah.
No, and this to like, so I can now do broadly fling mud at everybody. The Manichaean mindset that the people we disagree with are enemies who have an existential threat to our way of life and everything we believe is super helpful if you want to make a lot of money or you want to get elected to the office, but it's a dumbass way of approaching politics. It's a morally bankrupt way of approaching politics. It works because it's reductive and it's visceral. It's not accurate. Joe Biden, if you didn't vote for him, he's not your enemy. He's your opponent. I think Biden understands that intuitively. I like that about Biden. And we're not like it's like you can go back in the 90s and like people are like, oh, man, if we elect Clinton, like Clinton, who reformed welfare and was a free trade guy. And also we didn't have the budget was in the best situation it had been in the last 20 years. Like it's rare to have the country just vote on like, should we be a totalitarian dictatorship or should we be a center right like that? Like, it's people panic more than they should.
Well, and we all have caricatures of what the other side actually believes as opposed to, and there are extremes that do that. But to put a really tortured example in the mix, remember when Ellen went to like a baseball game with Bush? Right.
Yeah.
And everyone on the left lost their mind. Yeah, like, and she was like, well, we're friends. And they're like, but he did all those horrible things. And you're like, okay, I think it's very important.
By the way, Ellen had been abusing her staff for like a decade. I was more shocked that Bush went to a baseball game with Ellen. I've been doing Bush for that.
But all right, gang. I know that everybody's going to go hang out with the Secret Service and do their QAnon conspiracies with the State Department.
That's what we're calling remote schooling. I got to get the
call back.
Yeah, I got to go prove the Earth is flat. So
pleasure to see everybody. Can everybody go around real quick, say what the name of their program is?
We have the Lost in America podcast. Sorry, I'm not Andrea, but this is Turner Sparks, Michael, Eric, Kevin. We have the Lost in America podcast. Listen to us on iTunes. Listen to us on any major podcast platform. This past week, we talked to Malaysian comedian Kevin Jay, is a Netflix special out. He gave us an hour-long rundown of the last 2 years of Malaysian government politics, presidential, prime minister politics. It involves imprisoning each other. It involves a 95-year-old who was prime minister. It's insane. So I would advise listening to
that. A lot of bribery. It's fun times.
Nice. I will say your podcast is the main reason I'm reminded there are other countries besides the U.S. So thank you.
Tagline for
that. I'm going to get a globe with Lost in America listed on it. I'm Andrea Jones, where I host Ask a Political Scientist. We're gearing up for season 3. And we bring on political scientists to talk about some of the deeper research behind the things that are going on. So something like, why do people believe in conspiracy theories and how that informs the day-to-day churn?
I'm Andrew Heaton. I host the Political Orphanage, which is policy, politics, and comedy. The most recent episode was on the fall of the Berlin Wall, which is actually a very macro historical episode. It's not that super political, but I do tie in at the end, so I encourage people to check it out. And it was so much fun hanging out with you. I'm glad we got to do this audio hot tub together.
Yes, it's cold in the hot tub now. We should turn the heat back on, but otherwise, very good.
Berlin Wall, it's a good thing, right? You didn't come back revisionist.
No, I'm in favor of the topic of the Berlin Wall. I'm on that side of the
debate. Tie it into the current walls, or we'll tune in to find out. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, gang. Goodbye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.